Number 7, culture. I often quote John Edward Hurley. He was the head of the Confederate Museum in Washington when I lived there. One night he gave a speech at the Smithsonian, and he was asked why Southern culture was relevant to the questioner, who was a young man who seemed very perturbed by this speech that he had wandered into. And John Edward Hurley raised himself up and turned to him, and he said, "Young man, culture is the integration of the divine in everyday life." I've always thought that was the best definition of culture I'd ever heard, but I used to later say that John Edward Hurley had forgot to warn me that it could also be the integration of the demonic into everyday life, and that's something we are unfortunately watching as the occult and demonic forces show their face more and more these days. Humans are biophysical beings. You and I have a biophysical presence. And we have the power to create our world in cooperation with the other living people and creatures and things around us. One of the most critical questions that we need to ask and answer each for ourselves is, how do I manage and nurture my energetic being and my soul? And how do I connect with others? And how do they manage and nurture their energetic beings? How do we influence each other in positive ways? How do we share intelligence, both divine intelligence and living intelligence? And how do we organize our time and habits and our shared intelligence in alignment with that divine intelligence? It has helped me to understand the deep state, to understand shared intelligence and morphogenic fields. If you look in the best books for 2020, you will see The Field by Lynn McTaggart. I often recommend Rupert Sheldrake's writings and speeches on morphogenic fields. Check out Bill Tiller and John Rappaport's Solari reports on these topics. Rappaport has a great book called The Secret of Secret Societies, and we have a Solari report called The Power of It, which is linked in your subscriber links. His interview series, which you can get if you buy his Matrix Revealed collection, is also just a wealth of information on these questions. All of this material explores the invisible powers and connections that we share. The thing that most affirmed my understanding and appreciation of these powers was dealing with the deep state tactics that I dealt with during the Hamilton Securities litigation. Many of their smear and harassment tactics seemed to be organized around field management and cutting me off from the greater field, isolating me. The deep state are master manipulators of the field, and they are constantly inventing and reaffirming our reality. That's part of how they use these techniques. So this is all about our management of the invisible powers and authorities and access and spheres of influence. We are increasingly encouraged to believe, and children raised to believe, that these are all not real. This is all part of hypermaterialism, and also part of that is getting people tremendously focused on money, money, money. That negates our ability to see and access the invisible, whether it's the spiritual invisible, the intellectual invisible from a concrete standpoint, or different invisible technologies like EMF radiation or cell technology or mind control. In part 6, Politics, I described Dr. William Tiller's research on our ability to influence reality, and his experiments are very compelling, so I would encourage you to listen to that Solari report if you hadn't. We have the responsibility to access, to develop, and exercise these powers wisely. And that includes accessing divine intelligence. As you know from listening to me talk about the digital technology, I think there's an effort underway to get us to cut ourselves off from divine intelligence and to resonate instead of with living in divine intelligence, resonate with machine intelligence. It's all part of putting AI and software in control and making us and our fields very easy to manipulate and govern. A favorite sermon of mine is one by Reverend Tim Keller from New York. And it's a series of that he did on Proverbs. It's 22 cassettes. A friend sent it to me and I was stunned. When in the world was I going to listen to 22 cassettes? It turned out, of course, when I'm driving, and I enjoyed them immensely. So after the first one, I was hooked. One of the things Keller says, and I'm using my words, not his, was that many people completely understand what the fear of the Lord means. He says it means that once you've known what it is to live in that light and love and intelligence, you cannot imagine living without it, and you will do anything to ensure not to get cut off. So think about that. Light, love, and intelligence, and sharing the wisdom of all living things is our inheritance. Culture includes the set of shared habits and protocols we create to do that together. One of my greatest challenges was a great deal was done during the litigation to destroy my good habits, destroy my good protocols, and trying to build them back and maintain them in the face of the shriek-o-meter, the harassment, everything else, when everything around you is very corrupt and debased, and of course generating huge amounts of shadow work for you, it's very hard to do, but critically important. Scripture says, the prayers of a righteous man availeth much. I want to relate that to what you keep hearing from me, always associate with people of integrity. If you are moving to the light, you need to avoid people who are going to slow you down or stop you or even try and move you to the dark. We are surrounded by occult and demonic forces and criminal forces. I've known plenty of great criminals who don't practice occult or demonic forces, but the effect can often be the same. So please do not give them access to your money, your body, your data, your mind, or your soul. Cultivate a clean culture, not just your own, but the people around you who you let into your life. That's where the law begins, in the culture, not in the courts or in the government. Law doesn't start with a gun. It starts with an idea and a spiritual and cultural commitment regarding our personal responsibilities and obligations. I once had a great Bible class teacher who told me, oh, you're making it too complicated. It's really simple. It's in Leviticus. It says we have to take care of the land, we have to take care of each other, and we have to take care of ourselves. Indeed, that's it. So don't let corruption around you deter you from finding the opportunity in that one amazing insight. If you have not read our Coming Clean piece or listened to our interview with Eunice Boston on Coming Clean, I recommend them both. And I also recommend a story that I have in the library that's one of my favorite stories. And many of you who've been with us for a while, if you're in the club, you probably know this story. It's called Karma Means You Don't Get Away with Anything. I first heard it when I was at an investment conference in the City of London, and a very astute City of London investor, institutional investor, stood up and told the story. Jung, the psychoanalyst Jung, was practicing, and a woman came to see him one day, dressed clearly very wealthy from the upper echelons of society. And she came in and she told Jung that she wasn't going to give him her name. She was only planning on coming once, and then she would never come again. But she felt if she told her story, somehow that would clear her situation and improve her situation. And here's what her story was. As a very young, wealthy woman, she had gone to medical school and then shortly thereafter fallen in love with her best friend's husband. And she couldn't reconcile the tension, so being a skilled doctor, a trained doctor at that point, she knew how to do it. She poisoned and killed her best friend and then married the husband. And she explained to Jung, from then on, everything in her life went wrong. She had beautiful wolfhounds who suddenly died. She was an accomplished horsewoman, and she had to give up riding because the horses would always buck and rear. Her husband, she got pregnant, and her husband died not that long after she got pregnant, and so she lost her husband. Her daughter was born, and from the time she was born, she hated her mother, and as soon as she was old enough to run away, she ran off, and she didn't know where she was. She told Jung that no matter where she was, the birds would stop singing. She said the birds knew. And her theory was, if she, as they say in scripture, confessed with her mouth, that somehow she could clear the energy and the karma and go back to living a life in society. And of course, Jung and we never know what happened. The problem in America and many places around the world is there's no amount of fiscal or monetary largesse that can keep the economy going when the birds stop singing for us. There's no amount of laws, there's no amount of mind control, there's no amount of force. There's no amount of laws saying that companies cannot boycott Israel or criticize them that's going to get the birds singing for Israel, you know, or their backers in Beverly Hills. Jim Mattis was right, and we should have listened to him. Force, including the Space Force, is not sufficient as a basis for great power. That's why I keep talking about things like the Mandate of Heaven. And if you don't understand what the Mandate of Heaven is, you should go just look it up in encyclopedia or Wikipedia and familiarize yourself, because it's real and it's in the field. And America has lost its Mandate of Heaven, and the events that are accelerating now will demonstrate that in far more concrete ways than sort of what happens when the invisible covering disappears. One of the reasons that you have numerous groups and cults who are rabid about sound money and furious about the financial and fiscal largesse of global governments to date is because they understand that when you debase the financial currency, then you will ultimately debase numerous economic standards. So for example, such as food safety standards. And then ultimately this will lead to the debasement of communication, then culture, then health, then science. It spreads like a virus. Debasement of the currency corrupts intelligence and communication, and ultimately a society veers from productive behavior and accountability into unproductive behavior and an absence of accountability. And that includes the destruction of savers and the incentives to save and invest in productive ways. Essentially, you take the portion of society that are slugs and you elevate them at the expense of the productive people. So you end up with massive malappropriation of capital, both financial capital and human and intellectual capital and civic capital. This connection between money and culture is not intuitively obvious to people, especially people who are not interested or experienced with money and finance. To the extent this includes a lot of people who are not greedy, and their absence of greed explains their absence of interest in all things financial, that lack of understanding puts not just them at a disadvantage, but all of us. If you want to save your community or the planet, you need to know how the money works. That means that you need a basic literacy in the language of money, whether it's math, statistics, or accounting, as well as making sure you understand the basic terms and concepts involved. Most important in developing literacy is seeing the money around you. So if you haven't listened to Mapping Your Local Ecosystem, it's in the subscriber links. One of the things that you will learn about the people, most of the people in the deep state, is that if you do not have a basic education in understanding the economy and resources and the tools necessary to help acquire, manage, and allocate them, then you are not considered, with rare exceptions, somebody to respect. And this is part of the cycle of disrespect. They work hard to build that literacy, and they don't respect people who don't, and therefore allow themselves to be manipulated and fooled accordingly. Their attitude is, you know, we're doing a lot of tough, heavy lifting, and you hide behind the story of I am good, which is a form of cop-out, and then reserve the right to whine about us. And so that, again, that goes back to the cycle of disrespect I talked about in the discussion of politics. One of my favorite quotes is from Chris Powell. Fiat currency has done far more environmental harm than the worst mining companies could ever do. That is absolutely true. That's why it's so sad that the climate change op is going to be used to take the concern for the environment, particularly of young people, and translate it into political support for the largest fiat currency largesse yet, which will do enormous environmental damage. So as the songwriter says, hold on, this is going to hurt like hell. The financial coup in the Western world that's gone on for, say, since 1997, is now being followed up with a double down on the effort to destroy Western culture. First you steal the money, then you attack the culture, although they've been running in tandem. This is coming more from the networks that run entertainment media than necessarily parts of the a lot of the parts of the deep state. It's more concentrated. But it's particularly coming from those who are seriously invested in occult practices and or organized crime. And oddly enough, you know, at this late date, it's now in the United States coming much more from the Democratic side. You see destruction of the family, promotion of hypermaterialism, promotion of self-centered thinking and behavior, you know, turn somebody into a child and they're much easier to control. Thinking with emotion in a manner that overrides rationality and logic. If they have lousy educations, then you really got them. Promote divide and conquer. We're in the middle of major divide and conquer in the United States right now. Promote promiscuity, promote addictions. The number of addictions are just increasing dramatically. Promote occult art, music, and practices. Remove beauty from public spaces and day-to-day life. Literally, when I was at HUD and the 202 housing for the elderly, we had to purposely make it ugly. Congress would not tolerate us making it beautiful. And it was much better for the economics and much cheaper for us, much more economic for the government and taxpayers if it was beautiful. And then promotion of surveillance and mind control machinery that can control and weaponize the population. And I'm sure, you know, I could think of 20 more and you could too. So it goes on and on and on. All of this is designed to convert us to the model I keep talking about, where a human is no longer a sovereign individual whose freedom is derived from divine authority. Rather, we're an asset, just like a natural resource. So to be used as labor or farmed or our organs harvested or a source of data or DNA or involuntary purchases, mandated purchases or services from the draft to human trafficking. So instead of a physical invasion, we're now experiencing a very invisible invasion, but it's legal, it's financial, and now cultural. The good news is that you and I have the power to determine what our culture is. My culture is what I believe, what I know, what I do. If I decide, I decide what art I look at. I decide what music I listen to. I decide who and what I choose to associate with. Yes, the people who run things have the power to kill me and poison me and make my life difficult, push me around. But it's very, very important if you're going to understand how to have a great culture. Death is not the worst thing that can happen. You've got to get clear on this point. This is the beginning of your culture, is understanding that death is not the worst thing that can happen, because then the threat of death can be used to control and manipulate you and literally destroy your culture. Living in an occult culture or living as a mind-controlled slave is far worse. It is a much worse fate than death. That is a situation in which I can lose my access to the divine intelligence, which provides our love, our intelligence, our power. Being lost is worse than being dead, because our bodies are temporal, but our souls are not. Never give up immortality for a short-term fix. That's my motto. It's like whenever somebody would sell their soul, I was like, don't they understand present value? The present value of an immortal flow is worth a lot. I believe understanding your immortality is the secret to finding your balance in the storm. It's the secret to doing what's often described as the Bible as just stand. One of the reasons I used the quote from Marcus Aurelius from The Gladiator that I love so much. It's in this week's commentary. Death smiles at us all. All a man can do is smile back. Let me speak now as an American, but you can translate this into your country or tribe for sure. The Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the United States Constitution are first and foremost a spiritual and cultural covenant. That is a much more important part of what they are than as a legal document or governing document. They are a spiritual and cultural covenant that we share with a group of people. You can tear down, you can bankrupt, you can destroy the U.S. government, but that will not destroy my spiritual and cultural covenant. That is part of what I am. That is what I choose to be. That is the part of this which is enduring. And no group of criminals can destroy that. And that is why the effort to destroy and or manipulate our culture is happening, because the people who would destroy it know that bringing down the government is insufficient. They understand that law is first and foremost a living reality. It lives in our culture, and it is an important part, and that's what makes our culture traditionally so powerful. I mentioned in Politics, John Adams, who wrote in 1818, quote, "But what do we mean by the American Revolution? Do we mean the American War? The revolution was effected before the war commenced. The revolution was in the hearts and minds of the people, a change in their religious sentiments of their duties and obligations." So the forces in the process of bankrupting and destroying the American government do not have the power to destroy our Constitution. Only the American people have that power. It is in our hearts and in our minds. We have the power to implement it in our minds, our homes, our lives, our communities, our work, and with our neighbors, with our local sheriff and political leadership, all to ensure adherence locally. Look at what just happened in Southern Virginia this week. A group of 20,000, estimated as many as 50,000, who went to Richmond for constitutional carry. They were demonstrating a profound spiritual and cultural covenant to the Constitution of the United States, backed up by their sheriffs and local leaderships. That's why they've created Second Amendment sanctuary cities. We also have the power in America to enforce these laws. If the government is violating them, we have the power to enforce them. And that includes holding the federal government and the banks that run the federal government accounts as depository accountable for the $21 trillion missing. Again, I'm going to say more on that in Take Action 2020, which I'll publish as soon as we get a state of our currency off to the printer. This is why Dr. Farrell said, "It's too late to save the government, but it's not too late to save the culture." Great cultures create governments. They shut down governments. The culture is what is important, and that is what we control. One of Dr. Farrell's recent books, Microcosm and Mind, is a very insightful book about the attempt to debase the culture, and I recommend it to you. Thomas Hupp used to say, the bigger the breakdown, the bigger the breakthrough. As change accelerates, go to the light. I go back to the story I told you in Politics about what happens in a system when the learning metabolism increases. Go to the light. Find the higher mind. That is where you will find solutions. Enjoy the highest possible learning speed compatible with good health and a free and inspired life. If things are not working, keep learning in the direction where things might work. Turn off the debasement and nurture your soul. This is why Nina Hein calls her column Food for the Soul. We publish it to inspire you with ideas to invest time and resources in nurturing your culture. We think that's a great idea. Prayer counts, intention counts, your vision counts, your actions counts. One of the greatest weapons at work, and the deep state is masters of using it, is to use entrainment and mind control technology to encourage hopelessness. It's hopeless. There's nothing you can do. Wrong. If it was true, there would not be billions of dollars being spent to promote hopelessness. As John Rappaport says, hopelessness is an op and it's planet-wide. John's right. It's a very powerful technique. It reminds me of the promotion of the collapse scenarios for years. While we were giving up and walking away, they were buying everything with our money for cheaper. So fight for your culture. There are allies everywhere to help you do this. Oddly enough, many of the allies are in jobs which you and I might think or would describe as working in or for the deep state. As things change, we are going to regroup first and foremost around values. So it's not a bad idea to take a copy of the framing documents for your country and your state, wherever you are in the world. Read them with family and friends and find that spiritual and cultural covenant. Discuss what they mean in terms of what you need to make sure happens in your community. I used to belong to a wonderful group in Philadelphia called the Institute for the Study of Civic Values, and they had a whole process. You take the Constitution and go through a process with your community to rediscover what it meant and what those values were, and to inspire you to rejuvenate that culture at a local level. It was great stuff. The defining battle in both politics and culture will first and foremost be a battle for the hearts and minds and the rule of law, all around the issue of individual sovereignty and rights. Whatever happens in the battle to reform government, we have the power to preserve our culture. And that must come first, as that is the foundation of a free society, let alone a sound financial system or government. So please remember Da Vinci's words, quote, "If there's no love, what then?"